From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our special broadcast from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, we sit down with Professor Tony Montaro to discuss what's happening on the streets and inside. Well, Professor Montaro, here we are, Cleveland.
It's really good to be here with you face to face, Don.
Yes, likewise. So, what do you think so far? What's your analysis of what's been happening on the stage there, and also what's been happening or not happening in the streets?
Well, I think inside the convention, what we're seeing is a failed attempt to unite irreconcilables, that is, the Trump movement with the Republican Party. And, you know, Trump himself was nominated yesterday, and we could see in the way it was done that the other candidates who ran, Cruz and Rubio and Kasich, wanted their votes announced. So it was not a kind of a unanimity. The other thing is that you could see with people like Ryan and Christie that they were making their own pitches for the future leadership of whatever the Republican Party will be, with the assumption being that the Trump Party and the Republican Party are now two different entities. However, the anti-Hillary Clinton movement is an attempt to unite these two parties. I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm. We've got the last gasps of the traditional Republican establishment on display almost. And it's almost like a headcount when they forced the issue with the announcing of the delegates of those guys. It was fairly puny, really. It's. I don't understand why they wanted to stand up and be counted when they could be counted almost on one hand. And the other thing is that there was supposed to be all this activity in the streets, a massive movement against the proto-fascist Trump and all of that, and that hasn't really seemed to materialize, has it?
No, it hasn't. And I think it's because the forces of protest are mobilizing for the Democratic Party convention next week in Philadelphia, because I think people are beginning to understand that Hillary Clinton poses a genuine threat to world peace, and that she has tendencies that are criminal in the way that she has conducted her political life and in the ways that she and former President Bill Clinton have conducted their private business. In fact, they don't see, and this is what the email scandal shows, they don't see that big of a difference between their politics, their political and governmental responsibilities, and their personal lives and their enrichment of their personal lives. So there are a whole number of things that are leading to Philadelphia. The fact that she literally has stolen the nomination. It was not a fair process from the beginning. And so the Bernie or bust people, the Bernie delegates even in the convention, the Democracy Spring forces, the Black Lives Matter movement from all over the country and their activities that continue to take place, most recently today in New York and Washington and some other cities, protests at the FOP and the Police Benevolent Association. And, you know, of course, the movement within the labor movement to oust the FOP as a legitimate union, trade union. So they're coming. The anti-fracking people are coming. The environmental people are coming. The Palestinian, pro-Palestinian activists will be there. So Philadelphia is where the action is going to be, not here in Cleveland.
One of the things that I'm kind of puzzling over is the fact that if Trump were looking to build the workers' party that he spoke of, you know, the working class is divided over a lot of the both Republican and Democratic Party talking points. I think that's the sociological function that they serve, really. Why is he, he's not doing it himself, but why are the people that are putting on this convention massaging those things? In other words, they're taking sides with the police against Black Lives Matter rhetorically, and on a whole number of issues, and attacking the left as a threat to the and a problem, you know, one of the sources of problems with the country. It seems to me like I'm just puzzling over it.
Yeah, you know, it there is a certain lack of logic in the whole process of bringing together, and I put quotes around that, multiple sides of the Republican coalition. And as you know, the Republican coalition, since the time of Nixon, has been a white coalition. And there is no one disputes that. And so you get the evangelical Christians, you get the Tea Party, you get the policy people who are only concerned, let us say, with questions of taxation and small government and so on. All of these sides are trying to be brought under a tactical alliance to win the White House and to hold on to the Senate and House of Representatives in November. So it is kind of an alliance of convenience. Now, I don't think it's going to hold, because I think the Mitch McConnells and the Ryans and the senators that have come on board and some of the governors that have come on board are going to buy. I think they're going to abandon Trump if he does not show serious traction against Clinton. I think they'll abandon him, and that won't be a problem for them. And then look to the future of rebuilding the Republican Party as a presidential party. We know already that in terms of state legislatures and governors and congresspeople and that type of thing, you still have a viable Republican Party. The Tea Party couldn't dislodge it. I don't think the Trump movement can. But I think that a lot of questions are raised about class within this all-white party. And this is what is significant. This is what we've been talking about for several months now. The class issues and the class divisions among white Republicans and how that manifests in Trump's campaign. His, as you said, he said, I'll turn it into a workers' party in 5 years if I'm elected. His opposition to these trade agreements, his opposition to this huge military budget, especially as it relates to NATO and the Northeast Asian nuclear umbrella, his willingness to pull back from belligerency and brinksmanship with Russia in Eastern Europe or with China in Asia. This is a whole new paradigm. And, you know, like they say, in all things, you have to try to find the rational kernel. What is the essence of the opposition from the majority of the ruling class, especially from Wall Street, the financial capitalists, and the military, the intellectuals, the neocons associated with the military. Why are they so opposed to Trump? And it is it is what he represents in essence, what I would call the rational essence or the rational kernel of who Donald Trump is. And this is what we're faced with. They're irreconcilables. You can't reconcile Paul Ryan with Donald Trump. It just doesn't work. You can't reconcile Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Well, you might have a short-term tactical alliance, maybe, but the reconciliation is not going to happen. And I think that's what we see on the floor of this convention. You know, we saw Mitch McConnell being booed during Ryan's speech, Paul Ryan's speech. People were walking out. So it's not a love fest at all. It's not a united party.
Yeah, I mean, these establishment Republicans are exactly the people that the voters, Republican voters in the primaries, voted down, essentially. As they were voting for Trump, they were voting against Cruz, Rubio, what's his name, Bush, the whole lot of them. Yeah. Yeah. And now I guess they're coming back because they see that this is the center of gravity, and or they want to be close to the body in the event that the thing dies.
Yes, yes, yes. I would agree with that. You know, that metaphor, close to the body, vultures hovering around, and because it's obvious Ryan has ambitions going forward, as does Christie. McConnell has wants to hold on to the Senate and his position there. But, see, I think a lot of people have missed, especially on the left, have missed the spectacular event that took place in this period. And that is the resounding defeat for the Republican Party establishment. And you have to give, even if you dislike, and there's a lot to dislike about Trump, the individual, a lot to dislike. But we're not personalized. We're not in a personal battle. This is politics. Right. This is history.
Right.
He, in introducing the notion that the system is rigged,
yeah.
I mean, that is as powerful a concept in American politics as the idea of the 1% and the 99% was back in, you know, 2011, 2012.
Right.
You know, that's going to resonate. That's going to become a part of political discourse for years going forward. And it resonates, interestingly, with the millennials. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Who have no investment. Even Bernie Sanders, who was the candidate of the millennials, began to use the idea of a rigged system. So I think Trump has made a historical contribution. The question is, under pressure, and this relates to, I think, your previous question, under pressure, will he bend? Will he make compromises that will, in fact, erode the trust that his base has in him? And he has admitted, he says it over and over again, and it is verified in polling data and other studies that his base is the working class, the white working class, the white poor, the lower middle class, those among the white population in the greatest distress, who know that the economy is not recovered, people like the people here in Cleveland and Ohio and Northwest Pennsylvania, in cities like Pittsburgh and Aliquippa and all of these Rust Belt areas of the country, they know the economy is not recovered for the working class. And they are angry, they are outraged. You know, and the other thing is that Trump got more votes than any Republican has ever gotten in a primary. More votes. And those were not just Republicans. They were not just Reagan Republicans. They were Democrats and independents who crossed over to vote for him.
Looking at the rational kernel that you referred to before, which certainly challenging some of the consensus positions on foreign policy that have clearly not done very much good for the working class here or people around the world. The pushback has been evident both in terms of the desertion from the Republican Party by some of the top leadership, the support that Hillary Clinton has almost unanimously across the entire political and economic elite. As it gets closer to an election, or even if, say, Trump should win the election, I'm guessing that those people are not going to go quietly into that good night. And so from the position of, say, Commander-in-Chief, he can certainly make an awful lot of policy decisions without needing Congress or anything else. But how do you see them fighting back?
Well, they'll fight back using whatever powers of government they have. I don't think that this Trump movement, from the standpoint of the ruling elite, can be allowed to continue. It is too destabilizing to the system of governance, to the system of rule, to the system of obscurantism that says to working people that this is a democracy. Well, he's already undermined the whole notion of democracy. You know, something we've always talked about, we've always known, it's a fake democracy. Right. Well, he puts it in his own terms. It's a rigged system. Right. You know what I'm saying? I think, from the standpoint of the left, I know the left is embedded in theory for in a lot of ways, often dogmatic theories, but we have to see this transitionary period. Whatever happens with the election, whether it's Hillary that is elected or Trump that is elected, the country is becoming ungovernable in the old way. Many people, as we've talked about this, have called, well, we need a new party. Well, I think we need a new movement, a united movement. There's a lot of ideological and political and organizational work that has to be done on the ground. We have to be among the dissidents, be they in the Trump movement or be they in the Bernie Sanders movement. We have to be among them. I think the great strategic task of the left at this time is to find points of unity between those in the Trump movement, many of whom are here at the convention, and you could just see it on television. These are not the rich people. These are working people. A lot of these people, you know, had to raise money, you know, with bake sales to get here. And the Bernie people, we got to bring them together with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the dissidents within the trade union movement, with the people in the environmental movement. The left cannot and should not see itself, and this is the mistake, as always marginal. Well, history is now on our side. You know, we're in the middle of all of this now. This is what we have been saying. The masses have awakened to what we have been saying. Now, what is turning a lot of people off is the fact that probably the most destabilizing to the system part of the overall movement comes from within the Republican Party and from among white working people who do suffer from all of the problems produced by a system of white supremacy. We know that. They are vulnerable to all kinds of slogans such as law and order. You know what I'm saying? Patriotic, even xenophobic ideas. But then I think, and this is my take on it, We always have to see, lurking underneath this, the class issues. What's happening with white working people? Why this movement now? Why not 5 years ago, 4 years ago? Why did the Tea Party fail in its effort to consolidate these very same people short term? Why has this become the destabilizing movement which has literally brought the Republican Party, the white man's party, if you will, to its knees? And going forward, what are these people who are the base of the Trump movement, what are they looking for in terms of the future?
Looking at the class issues that are illuminated just by the this act of waking up and making demands in the political system, certainly they're in common with the people that are behind Sanders and and with other people in Black Lives Movement. They all have additional context added to it, but these are common things. People are concerned about whether or not they'll have enough money to eat. They're concerned about keeping a roof over their head. They're concerned about the employment prospects. They're concerned about debt for education and health care and all of those things. There seems to be competing calls, I guess, coming out of the two campaigns around those issues, which are not being well defined in either case, so that they're almost like magic talking point words or something. But people have been hearing that stuff for a very long time, and they've been acting differently in this election than they have maybe ever. What do you think is a method of building like a unity platform to organize around that will sound different than those, you know, homogenous talking points that come out of the two parties?
Yeah, that's why the left, broadly understood, and I'm talking broadly now, the activist left, the left that is politically organized, the left that is organized based mainly, let us say, on social issues in communities and education and so on. You know, when I say the left, I'm talking about those people, and they're probably several millions of them in the United States who are activists fighting for radical and fundamental change, be it in education, the environment, the police, community relations, and so on. I think the left must do everything to embed itself in these movements. And that means a different paradigm for the left. Usually we think that what we do as people on the left is write articles, you know, and so you got counterpunch articles, you got alternate articles, you got Truth Out, Truth Dig, This Nation, you know. So we write articles and we engage in polemics with each other, often disassociated from the issues of the class itself. And I think maybe we should do less writing and more engagement at the level of the grassroots in conversation and in listening and in planning along with people. You know, I think that Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist and activist and political prisoner, gave us a really good conceptualization when he talked about creating and the role of the left to help to create a counter-hegemonic historical bloc. Now, by that he meant, when he said counter-hegemonic, counter to the dominant elite and its ideology and politics, but a historical bloc doesn't mean everybody, often doesn't mean the majority. It means a critical mass that is historically situated in a position that allows it to move events in ways that it sees as progressive and historically significant and relevant. Well, I think we're at the stage of a new historic block. And this will come out of the working class. I'm convinced, Don. I mean, maybe I'm naive. I've been accused of this. You know, white working people should not be broad brushed as racist and white supremacists and never going to change and evil and you can't talk to them and they're the worst people in the world. You can't do that. People change. Events and circumstances change people. And so that's what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. You know, I have, you know, it's not naive confidence, but I just have the confidence that oppression breeds resistance. Desperation breeds a sense of searching for new ways of being in the world. And white working people they're people just like the rest of us. And the same things that brought us into the movement for change will bring them into the movement.
And they seem to be in motion as well.
Yeah.
Finally, the convention will be over tomorrow, and it appears Trump is the candidate. He's officially the candidate. What do you see happening on the floor at the convention in Philly?
Well, I think Philly is going to be the place. And it could be upwards of 100,000 people, maybe more, you can't tell. I know they're coming from everywhere. They're walking, they're carpooling, and they're caravans. And a lot of them are already in Philly. That's why they're not here. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
That's right. That says something all by itself.
Oh, yes, it does. And you know, the other thing is that had Trump, and this is, you know, comparing, had Trump not won and he felt that it was a rigged convention, his people would have been demonstrating outside of this convention.
Right.
I think the Bernie people are going to be demonstrating inside and outside the convention. I don't think Bernie has any control over them, you know? And so I think Philadelphia could turn out to be an embarrassment for the Democratic establishment, especially for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton. I hope there's protest inside. I know there'll be protest outside. In Philly, there are going to be symposiums and rallies and workshops. In fact, we're starting this coming Saturday. We're starting with workshops and a people's convention and all of this even before the convention gets here. In fact, we're having workshops on civil disobedience, and we have legal teams and medical teams. So Philadelphia is preparing to welcome Hillary and her Democratic Party in a not so welcoming way.
And we'll be reporting from there as well. Tony, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.